The Trumpet Daily Program begins right now.
Today's world news, what it means, where it's taking us.
I bring you the one and only possible message of world peace.
This is a message of hope, tremendous hope. And he said unto me, you must prophesy again.
The Trumpet Daily Program begins right now.
On May 5th, 2015, the Philadelphia Church of God began broadcasting on KPCG 101.3, a low-power FM radio station available in North Edmond, Oklahoma. This was a significant step forward for the PCG, which had sought for years to follow in Herbert W. Armstrong's footsteps on radio. A PCG video from May 2015 shows the church's excitement about the new radio station.
We've been interested in obtaining our own radio station for years, if not decades. Knowing that the Worldwide Church of God had a radio station they use for PYC in the college, that's always been of interest to us.
The staff has tried to obtain a low-power license before.
They're rare. They're very rare. They're hard to get. And they're hard to get because there's only so much spectrum. I was surprised that we got this. I think it's nothing short of a miracle.
The PCG put in an application to the Federal Communications Commission for the station in October 2013. The license was finally granted on January 23rd, 2015.
About 2 years ago, a year and a half, 2 years ago, I let Mr. Stephen Fleury know the FCC had opened up available frequency in our area that we could apply for if we were still interested. We contracted with a professional to help us make our application and filed the application expecting early notification. But about 14 months passed before we were finally notified that we did receive the license.
Just looking at the circumstances under which we received the license for this radio station, It's pretty clear this was a miracle.
For the last 8 years, the radio broadcast and online live stream have carried the truth of God and other uplifting content to listeners around the world. The radio station reaches the local area around campus, but the live stream online allows listeners to tune in from anywhere. Over the years, the radio programming has slowly expanded to include many shows in addition to the Key of David and the Trumpet Daily. Trumpet Hour is the voice of the Philadelphia Trumpet News Magazine. Through Just the Best Literature and Shakespeare's Royal Education, listeners learn more about mankind's greatest literary works. Music for Life educates listeners about the greatest music man has created. Let the Stones Speak provides archaeological instruction from a biblical perspective. Many other programs, including Behind the Work, Live by Every Word, Rewind, Repeat, The Bible Story, The Sun Also Rises, and Trumpet Bookshelf educate listeners about various biblical and historical subjects or keep them up to date with news stories from the work and the world. Trumpet Radio has also produced some programs in German, French, and Spanish. The radio broadcast has had a huge impact on the work. May 5th is also the anniversary of the beginning of The Last Hour, as explained in PCG Pastor General Gerald Fleury's book by the same name. KPCG.fm has provided the PCG's Last Hour warning work with an incredible opportunity to deliver an informative and inspiring message to the world, expanding the effectiveness of the work of God. To learn more about the work of the Philadelphia Church of God, please visit pcg.church.
There it is, bonus edition of News of the Work on this May 5 anniversary, one of many anniversaries through the year that we draw attention to generally. This is the day we started broadcasting the Trumpet Daily. It was just radio at the beginning back in 2015. And, you know, even as you look at that eight-year period, it was in the fall of 2019 that we really started to push video out through YouTube at the time. This was before the election steal and all of the censorship that happened thereafter. But ahead of COVID, We were pushing for those videos on YouTube, and then, boy, those were lifesavers for a lot of people that were locked into their homes because of the lockdown. And so we had some pretty popularly viewed videos in the spring, the summer of 2020. So lots of history to look back upon on this day. You're listening to Stephen Fleury, and this is the Trumpet Daily. We certainly appreciate you joining our growing audience. You can get to the live video stream of this show at trumpetdaily.com. Just go to trumpetdaily.com. Takes you right to the live stream page. And of course, at our websites, you can also download this program or watch it on the website later if you'd prefer to watch on demand. I also want to give a shout out to our Trumpet Daily channel on Rumble. Have a look at that if you can sometime and leave some nice comments. And yeah, if you're off or you're in transit somewhere and you've got the Rumble app on your device, you can always watch the show live that way as well. So as was brought out there toward the end of that Behind the Work or News of the Work segment, it's not just the anniversary of this particular program, but going back to 2001, this is when my father announced, 22 years ago today, this is when he announced that we had entered into the last hour. Prophetically speaking, he drew attention to 1 John 2 and verse 18, a scripture so many of you know well, where God puts time, as this book brings out, he puts time on center stage. Satan knows, as my father explained in that book, and you can call our operators today to request your free copy. Satan knows his time is short. And just look at this world. Look at the world today as compared to the world in 2001, particularly before 9/11. I mean, you'll recall, so many of you, that the last hour, that message from my father came out on May 5, 2001, and then just a few months later, the World Trade Centers were brought down by terrorists from abroad. The Pentagon was attacked. There was the crash in that Pennsylvania field as well. And it's been a different world ever since. You think about we often talk about how that Barack Obama, and of course he makes up for 8 years, now 10 or 11 years, counting his third term through the puppet. But he's dominated so much of that time period. And we've talked about how that he weaponized all of these government agencies. The DHS, the Department of Homeland Security, was started in 2003. It's 20 years old, that's all. And it has 240,000 employees. And what started as an effort to protect the homeland from attacks abroad, now Barack Obama, the spirit of Antiochus, he's taken those agencies and he's turned them against American citizens. You listened to all of them yesterday when the Proud Boys verdicts came down. And they're cheering. They're gleefully cheering because these January 6th protesters are going to prison for maybe 20 years. They're cheering it on because they're talking about domestic terrorism as the single greatest threat facing the United States. That's what all of them say, from Merrick Garland all the way down. Of course, Barack Obama's behind it. We've got all this criminal activity going on all around us. And they're the same people that are cheering the Proud Boys verdicts. Those same people are trying to open the prisons in the case of actual hardened criminals. They want to let them all out. It's just the Trump people. That's the era that we're now entering into. We've been in it since the election steal. It's get Trump lawfare. I gave you the stats yesterday. They know, they understand how popular Donald Trump is. And they're resorting to the courts. More indictments are coming. They're cheering on the convictions. Seditious conspiracy, really? We'll get into that a little bit later as well. I'm getting ahead of myself. This is from the last hour. It says, "We now live in a dramatically new and far more dangerous time. It will be the worst hour ever in human history. God is calculating time as never before." That's from this book, The Last Hour. My father says, it's all about the worst hour in human history. Was there ever a more urgent work than this? Are you reflecting Christ's urgency in this last hour? He says, may God help us to make this last hour our finest hour. Now, together with all of these terrifying, earth-shaking events, well, you've also got the history that's being made by this church. 22 years ago, we were just preparing to start Armstrong College. All of this beautiful property that's now this gorgeous campus, God's headquarters on earth, all of it was just an open field, a pasture land. And we were just starting to break ground on the John Amos Fieldhouse. And look at all the other buildings and all the other items on this beautiful landscape. 22 years of some pretty exciting history for God's family, for God's church. We're coming into a coronation tomorrow in the UK. I mean, we haven't seen a British monarch crowned king in how long has it been? I guess if you count Queen Elizabeth back in 1953, she, of course, was a queen, and what, it's been 70-some years? 70 years or so since we've seen a British coronation. That happens tomorrow with King Charles. Melanie Phillips had a... It's interesting just listening to her or reading her over the years as she inches closer and closer and closer to the throne of David. Now, there's another book you need to order as well, The United States and Britain in Prophecy, as Herbert Armstrong has a lot to say about that Davidic throne, that Davidic covenant. This is from Melanie Phillips. Few realize that the British monarchy is patterned on Jewish history. Early English kings even believed they were descended from King David. She's right. We've made that point so many times before. Really, you just have to go back to the Victorian age of the 1800s. That's not that long ago, considering how long this British monarchy has continued. You mean you just go back a few generations and you have monarchs who believe they descended from King David, and they don't think that today. They don't believe that today. We'll talk about some of the changes they are going to make to the coronation ceremony in just a moment. But here's Melanie Phillips saying English kings even believe they were descended from King David. They appreciated the revolutionary aspect of ancient Israel. Its monarch was not the supreme ruler, a status which invites tyranny and despotism, but was himself answerable to God, the one true king over all. God was king, says Melanie Phillips. God was king in ancient Israel. She says here, the British coronation rite is modeled on the accession of King Solomon, as described in the Book of Kings. Solomon was escorted to the throne by both religious and military leaders, as will happen to Charles, and was anointed by Zadok the high priest, represented this weekend by the Archbishop of Canterbury. It says, the choir in the abbey will raise the roof with Handel's sublime Zadok the priest. We've talked about that song so many times before. Again, all of this history, it's right there in the ceremony. And again, a lot of it's being taken out because we're living in such a godless age, and King Charles is reaching out to all these other different religions. But if you just go back a few coronations and see how central God and the Bible are to those ceremonies, to those coronations. It says the choir in the abbey will raise the roof, singing Zadok the priest, and the holy oil will have been brought from Jordan, part of the original land of Israel. It says Jews know better than anyone else what keeps a nation together, its continuity, the adherence to principles, traditions, and rites that shape a people and are handed down through the generations. Continuity. They know how important it is. I mean, in the spiritual sense, we were talking about this just the other day in our final Epistles of Paul class, or maybe it was the second to last, but it's where Paul there in 2 Timothy 2 tells Timothy, now you go out and train leaders who then can go out and train leaders as well. You've got to keep the continuity going. That's why these traditions are so important. The Bible also talks about us holding fast to traditions And we've got to do it at a time when there's movements all around to destroy those traditions, to blot them out, to blot out even the name of Israel. Listen to Donald Trump. This is from his interview with Nigel Farage. He's talking about traditions, and he's talking about the continuity, and he's talking about how the throne of David, he doesn't say the throne of David, of course, but it's held the British people together to some extent. Clip 13.
The last time we spoke on GB News, it was in fact the 8th of September. It was the day that the Queen died, and mm-hmm. I could see you were very clearly moved by meeting this woman, and as you say, your mother was a huge fan.
She was.
Of the Queen. Now, coronation this Saturday, it's our first one for almost exactly 70 years, so yeah. it's a huge event. We've got over 100 heads of state from around the world are going to be in Westminster Abbey. If you were still in the White House, would you have gone to the coronation?
Well, I would. I think it's a very important event. I think it's a great thing. A lot of people talk about the monarchy. Should you have it? Should you not? I think it's a fantastic thing. It holds your country together, largely.
It holds your country together, largely. And yet, like my father brings out in The New Throne of David, that book's up here somewhere too, you see that royal family just splitting apart and divided. But there's Donald Trump, as you would expect. What he says, he's usually spot on. It holds your country together. My father's often talked about rallying around the throne of David, holding on to that throne. There's the book right there on your screen. The New Throne of David. That book came out in 2017. And look at what's happened to the royal family even since then. I'll come to that in a second. It says in Melanie Phillips' piece, Britain, however, is a very different nation from the one that greeted the late Queen Elizabeth II when she was crowned more than 70 years ago. Demographically, it is far more diverse with a plethora of different cultures and faiths. This will be acknowledged at the coronation. Britain's chief rabbi, Sir Ephraim Mirvis, and the equivalent representatives of Britain's Muslim, Sikh, Hindu, and Buddhist communities will step forward towards the king at the end of the ceremony and extend to him their good wishes and blessings. So it's everyone's invited. We're all in it together. We've got to be diverse. We hear so much about that here in the States as well. Diversity, equity. I mean, King Charles, they've said that Queen Elizabeth, you never could really figure out where her position was on any given issue, controversial or otherwise. But King Charles hasn't quite been that way. He's a pretty enthusiastic left winger himself. So here comes all of these various religions. We've got to do it. I mean, this is 2023 after all. Anything less would be divisive, I guess. It wouldn't be inclusive. So here are some of the changes then that you can expect for tomorrow. Philip says America, well, it just talks about these traditions that, like Donald Trump said there, traditions that have held our nations together. Now you see our nations barely holding on, hanging by a thread. It goes back through some of the history and the traditions upheld by America, how that both America and Britain had founding documents based on biblical teachings, principles, laws. It says here, that's why the onslaught on the Western nation and its core religious inheritance is so very troubling. The king is an intelligent and sensitive man who is devoted to his people and did many very good things as Prince of Wales. However, unease remains that he may not properly promote and defend these values that are now under siege. Will he defend and promote Western values, the traditional Judeo-ethic, you know, Christian Judeo-ethic? Many are concerned. It says the monarch must never be associated with anything that divides the public. And she talks about how the queen was so careful to keep things to herself and not speak out on politically motivated views. It says here, while the king has already become much more popular than might once have been imagined, there are concerns that he may not hold the line in the culture wars. Listen to this from The New Throne of David. Let me just grab it. You saw it there on your screen just a moment ago. This, as I said, came out in 2017, or this is, I guess, when my father was speaking about it. I think the book might have come out the following year. Either way, a powerful book. Powerful book. I'm not trying to inundate you with too many things to read here, but The Last Hour, U.S. and Britain in Prophecy, and then this one, The New Throne of David. That's a nice little library in and of itself. My father said, when God gave the revelation about the new stone on January 16, 2017, the royal family of Britain was displaced as the royal family of David's throne. That was a signal of terrible things to come upon Britain, as well as a sharp decline of America and Judah. That's what we've seen in the last 6 years, for sure. It was also an indication that we would see a rapid decline in Britain's royal family. We've certainly seen that since this book came out. Listen to Piers Morgan, what he said at Fox just the other day, clip 11.
And you know, they're going to have to be sitting there pretending to all be one big happy family, when in fact they're going to be probably the most dysfunctional family we've seen in one religious place for a very long time.
One of the most dysfunctional families ever to assemble in a religious place, so says Piers Morgan. That's amazing. I mean, it's sad and tragic, but it is part of the prophetic picture here that we're trying to help you receive. This is, of course, the family itself has abandoned these traditions in so many ways. As I say, it wasn't that long ago when they even understood they descended from David. Not so today. Going back to that interview with Farage, Donald Trump talks here about Harry and Meghan and just the disrespect that they showed to the Queen. This is clip 12.
But somebody else who's not coming, of course, is Meghan. Meghan is not coming. Harry's coming. We understand it's a complete in, out. Like within 2 hours after the service, he'll be gone. But I kind of think maybe we're better off without Meghan coming.
Well, I think that she has been very disrespectful to the Queen, frankly, even during that time. I mean, how can you be disrespectful to the Queen? Well, then I said, who is your favorite prime minister? And she said, just fabulous people, every one of them. But wasn't it Winston Churchill? Oh, I liked him very much. And I'm saying to myself, you know, this is so smart because there's like no controversy. Yeah. She went through years and years and decades without controversy and just did a great job. You cannot be disrespectful to her. And I think Meghan was very disrespectful to her. Very, very disrespectful.
Oh, I think, you know, up until her death, I think she was the most popular human being in the world. Yeah. I think the respect she commanded.
I would say that is true.
Throughout the Commonwealth, America, elsewhere. Yeah. She was amazing.
There's Donald Trump talking about the grandchildren disrespecting the Queen Mother. Those are truer words have never been said. Look at the way they treated this woman that was so widely respected around the world. I mean, she didn't do everything perfectly. We've certainly talked about that over the years. But this dysfunctional family and the way they turned on the Queen, so many of them. Like my father said, and I think it's page 59 of The New Throne of David. Go and look it up today at the website, by the way. There's another article, a new article my father wrote. It's The Awesome Secret Behind King Charles's Coronation. And he talks about the divided family. It says, such divisive conduct is accelerating the disintegration of this throne, its importance, and its history of elevating lives around the world. It says, why such a sustained attack? And why is it focusing on morality? What's behind this attack? We talk so often about the movement to blot out the name of Israel here in the United States. It's happening in Britain, too. Well, what's behind this? Well, for that, go to America Under Attack. There's another one to put in the library. There's another one. I really should say there's another one to read and study. We've got to pull them off the library shelf and internalize this truth, the sure word of Bible prophecy. Gives us so much insight into the affairs of this earth. It says, because biblical morals and a history with God are the source of strength for the throne of David, for this reason, the devil has a special hatred for Britain's royal family. He knows the history and the prophecy of the throne of David contains the very master plan of God. He has a special hatred for the throne of David. He has a special hatred for the nations of Israel, for Ephraim and Manasseh. And this is how you explain the world post May 5, 2001, the last 22 years. You had the 9/11 attacks, and then look at all that's happened since. It's a different world, a totally different world. And Satan is behind this. He's behind all of it. He's got his fingerprints on everything. It's his world, isn't it? One last quote. Again, you can find this at the Trumpet website today. I'm not sure if it's posted now or will be shortly. But it says, yet he will not prevail. Speaking of the devil, my father says, God will keep his promise to Abraham and David. He has already implemented a major, miraculous, inspiring change to that throne in order to keep those promises. Even before these changes were made to coronation ceremony, he made a significant change to that throne. It says, I encourage you to read about it in our free book, The New Throne of David, the book I just showed you a moment ago. We'll take a short break and come back with quite a lot more that we need to try to plow through here before today's show ends. You're listening to Stephen Fleury, and this is The Trumpet Daily. We'll be right back.
The Trumpet Daily. One third of your Bible is prophecy, and 90% of it is for our time today. This is why, when you study Bible prophecy, you often read statements like, in that day, in the last days, and at the time of the end. Biblical prophecy is what makes the Bible so relevant to today, so essential to understanding our modern world. Most people, even in the world of religion, assume that nations like Britain, America, Germany, Russia, and China are not mentioned in Bible prophecy. But if prophecy is mainly for our time today, how could the Bible ignore some of the most powerful and prominent nations of today? The key to understanding prophecy is knowing the biblical identities of modern nations. Learn about these identities in Herbert W. Armstrong's book, The United States and Britain in Prophecy. In this book, you will learn about the astonishing identity of the American and British people in biblical prophecies. Request your free copy today, The United States and Britain in Prophecy.
The Trumpet Daily.
Today, the Justice Department secured the conviction of four leaders of the Proud Boys for seditious conspiracy related to the January 6th attack on the Capitol. In addition, those defendants and a fifth member of the Proud Boys were all convicted of felonies, including obstructing Congress's certification of the 2020 presidential election results and conspiring to prevent Congress and federal officers from discharging their duties. The evidence presented at trial detailed the extent of the violence at the Capitol on January 6th and the central role these defendants played in setting into motion the unlawful events of that day. Today's verdict makes clear that the Justice Department will do everything in its power to defend the American people and American democracy. Since the January 6th attack, the Justice Department has conducted one of the largest, most complex, and most resource-intensive investigations in our history.
So they get the convictions, and then he's out with Chris Wray. He's got all the heavy hitters. They're out there spiking the football, continuing to brag about the size and the scope of this investigation that never ends. And it just only applies to January 6th. Certainly not the summer of love 6 months earlier. That was just, think about that for a moment. All of those riots going after federal courthouses in Portland, attacking the White House even, burning a police precinct down in Minneapolis. That happened just 6-7 months before January 6, 2021. And what did the Justice Department, what did the FBI do about any of those thugs, those killers in some cases. They attacked the White House and injured 50 police officers and Secret Service. Are any of them in jail for seditious conspiracy? Last time I checked, the White House was a branch of the government too. This is what seditious, it's the U.S. Code 2384. Here's what it is. If two or more persons in any state or territory or any place subject to the jurisdiction of the U.S. conspire to overthrow, put down, or destroy by force the government of the United States. Here these guys showed up with no weapons because they had conspired to overthrow the United States government. This has to be the most laughable insurrection in the history of insurrections. You don't even, in a nation with 400 million firearms, they don't come with one rifle? They don't come with one weapon? If the plan was to overthrow the government of the United States, what a farce this is. A total farce. A Fedsurrection, that's what it amounts to. And then they get up there and they brag about it. Then they get up there, they take the victory lap. I mean, this is just outrageous what's happening. It's all about getting Trump. This is get Trump lawfare. That's what we're going to call it now. They're resorting to the courts. They can't beat him at the ballot box. He's winning by a landslide. So says McLaughlin in their poll. So go after him with the court. Just listen to Andy McCarthy. He's now a never Trumper, but at least he has some sense when it comes to these sham investigations and trials. It says here, just as in prior seditious conspiracy prosecutions, the government portrayed Trump as if he were a nigh irrelevant side issue. So the feds go after the Proud Boys, but then in court, keep this in mind, because they don't do this at MSNBC. They don't do this at Morning Joe. But in court, they have to shove aside Trump and say he didn't incite it. Look, we're going after these boys, Proud Boys, for seditious conspiracy. It says, at the time, Trump was president. Well, this is backing up. As I've pointed out before, there are legal reasons why they want to make Trump irrelevant. At the time, Trump was president, the most powerful official in the government. If the prosecution's theory were that quasi-militias conducted an attack because they were ordered to by the president, then it would be impossible to argue that they were levying war against the United States and opposing government authority by force. Donald Trump was the head of that government, right? He was president at the time. The crime prescribed by the seditious conspiracy statute, it says their defense would be that they were defending the United States pursuant to the direction of the government's commander-in-chief. So instead, they have to push Trump aside. Think about this for a moment. This is the legal system, and what a convoluted system it is. I mean, flying through hoops just to try to get these guys behind bars for 20 years. You have the prosecutors representing the feds. You have the prosecutors saying, no, no, Trump didn't incite anything. Let's just get these boys on seditious conspiracy. And then you have the defense, the guys defending the Proud Boys saying, well, look, Trump incited us. If you're going to say we're guilty of insurrection, then you got to get Trump. It's exactly the opposite of what you would think it would be, right? So the way that it works is the prosecutors, they go into court, they find some little loophole or some little technicality that can get the guys on seditious conspiracy. And then when Morning Joe reports on it, Morning Joe says, well, you got to get Trump too. Trump incited it. Yeah, but Trump was the president. So were they trying to overthrow the government or were they carrying out the head of that government's request? McCarthy says, they are thus playing a double game. To get the seditious conspiracy convictions, they structure prosecutions as if Trump were irrelevant to the riot. Then, once they've got the convictions, they chirp that right after Trump gave an inciting speech, Trump supporters violently attacked the Capitol to try to keep him in power. You see how important the fourth branch of the security state is, the media branch. The propaganda arm of the radical Communist Party. Because then it's all they... Nobody's going to go and read the briefings in court or hear about how the lawyers argued one side or the other. All they hear now today is convictions. Yeah, domestic terrorism. This is why the Homeland Security and the DOJ and the FBI, this is why they need hundreds of thousands of employees, because there's domestic terrorists all over the place. Here's Chris Hayes on MSNBC, clip four.
And you may be asking yourself, as I am after watching that clip, the obvious question. What about the man at whose behest this conspiracy was launched? The man who would stand most to benefit. We have seen the government, in what is the largest criminal case they've ever undertaken in toto, prosecute the hundreds of foot soldiers of January 6th, the people that entered the Capitol. What about the man who incited insurrection in the first place? The man these militias believed they were acting on behalf of when they tried to overturn the results of a freer and fairer election by force. Because make no mistake, Donald Trump is running for president a third time in order to finish the job he started on January 6th when he almost ended free and fair elections in this country.
So there he is saying Trump is responsible. And the lawyers, the prosecutors going after the Proud Boys, they're there in court telling the jury, telling the judge, no, Trump's not responsible at all. You think this is a free and fair system? Innocent until proven guilty? I mean, just look at the statute that's on the books for seditious conspiracy. It's preposterous to say that these protests turn unruly or even into a riot. Oh, that's one thing. But this conspiring to overthrow the government of which Donald Trump was president? It doesn't even make sense, does it? He's smart enough. He's smart enough to figure this out. They know. They know what it's about. They know how to play the game. Just get the guys in jail. The average Americans will look at that and think, boy, I don't want to go to jail. And I guess they must have done something. They got convicted, so they must have done something wrong. And then they hear Chris Hayes saying, yeah, and Trump's the one that incited them. You see how it works. Listen to another one from the same channel, clip five.
The impact, Katie, may not necessarily end up being in a court of law. This is going to help frame the narrative around January 6th in a way that will reverberate in political spaces as well. Don't forget, he's obviously running for president. Yeah. And so how this is characterized and him being, you know, Enrique Ontario and the Oath Keepers and the Proud Boys being convicted in this way basically does not do well for the narrative that Donald Trump wants to advance as a candidate.
There's another commentator there saying the quiet part out loud. Yeah, the impact on Trump, it may not be in a court of law, but, you know, politically, this is really going to hurt him. Because the foot soldiers, as Chris Hayes says, the Trump's foot soldiers are in prison, so many of them. So surely this finishes Trump. Surely this means he can't be president again. This is Joe Scarborough this morning, clip eight.
You look at the people that have been rolled up, sent to jail. You look at the deliberate process that he's gone through. He's getting convictions on charges that are extraordinarily difficult to prove, extraordinarily rare, even charge in the United States. And one after another after another, he is bringing these insurrectionists, these thugs to justice, isn't he?
Isn't it? Particularly perverse to see how much joy they get from this. These are the same people, as I said earlier, that want to open up the prison gates in nearly every case. When they're rapists, when they're murderers, just let them out. Let them out. Listen again to Morning Joe, clip nine.
Four of the five convicted of seditious conspiracy, and this is now the third jury that has convicted senior members of that insurrection of seditious conspiracy, which tells us what? That this was not just a riot, an unruly crowd that broke into spontaneous violence. There was planned violence here. Now, prosecutors haven't established that there was a plan to attack the Capitol in advance, but what they said was that the Proud Boys were acting as Donald Trump's army, that they came that day to try to keep Donald Trump in power. They were going to use whatever violence they deemed necessary. We all know it could have been a lot worse. There were people with weapons in that crowd.
There were people with weapons in that crowd. Which people and what weapons? Would you care to elaborate? Which people had the firearms? Which people had... They lied even about the fire extinguisher. Which people had these weapons? If this was a seditious conspiracy to overthrow the government of the United States, it might have been good to bring at least a grenade or two. It's astounding, really, that 6 months before the January 6th protest, you had people burning churches across the street from the White House. You had them surrounding the White House. You had them pummeling Secret Service with bottles of frozen water. You had them chasing after Rand Paul, attacking him as he left the White House. This is all happening right around government buildings in the United States, in D.C. You can throw Portland in the mix as well. And law enforcement, you know, Bill Barr's DOJ just stood aside, I guess, and watched as thugs burned down a police station in Minneapolis. No two-year-long investigation surrounding that. This morning in the morning brief, Richard talked about this Jordan Neely case, this crazy man who had been arrested 42 times. He's guilty of felonies in and out of jail. They just keep letting him out because, well, that's what you're supposed to do, not just with criminals, but with crazy lunatics as well. He's terrorizing these people on the subway. Three men apprehend him. One puts him in a chokehold. He dies, Jordan Neely. So you guessed it. He's now a victim. He's now a victim, this guy, that beat up a 67-year-old woman and disfigured her. Jordan Neely is the victim because the white guy that had, there were others of different colors, they're helping him, but let's just focus on the white guy who used to be in the army. I mean, that's perfect. If he was there on Jan 6, I mean, that's right there. That's the electric chair. But he's a white guy. He was in the army. So let's go after him. And let's listen to this from CNN. This is about Jordan Neely. This is the guy that was choked to death. Okay, he did die. It says, before Jordan Neely was killed on a New York City subway car this week, he was known for his swift Michael Jordan dance moves that entertained many, yet he struggled with the trauma his mother's murder had left him with at an early age. He was struggling with trauma, this guy. The media want to make this into another George Floyd case. In other words, they want to whip up more anger. They want to incite more violence. As long as it's aimed at just society in general, and certainly at Trump supporters, let's take to the streets and destroy. And then you see how they report on the Proud Boys, who showed up at Congress or the Capitol with no weapons, I guess because they wanted to overthrow the government of the United States. McCarthy says, in its prosecutions, the Justice Department has zealously fought against defense efforts to claim that Trump was criminally responsible for the violence at the Capitol. It's the defense. I mean, in other words, they'll say anything in court on the defense to try to get their client free. And then, as you see from what I've covered today as well, the prosecution, they'll say anything to try to get him behind bars. So it's the defense that are saying Trump incited it. And it's the feds who are saying, no, Trump didn't incite it. But now when it's over, Chris Hayes, Joe Scarborough, I mean, they get the memo. They know how they're supposed to discuss this. Yeah, this is a happy days for America to get some of those Trump supporters behind bars. And now, ladies and gentlemen of America, now, just so that you know, Trump is guilty too. He's the one who incited it. What a system. You think you're going to get fairness out of this? Does this sound like a just system to you? The New York Times says this about the Proud Boys cases. Judge Kelly's rulings allowed prosecutors to introduce damning evidence about the violent behavior and aggressive language of members of the Proud Boys who had only limited connections to the five defendants. It says the rulings also permitted jurors to convict on conspiracy even if they found there was no plan to disrupt the certification of the election. This is what a good judge in Manhattan does. I guess, no, this is D.C. It's one of the two. This is where the kangaroo courts are situated. Go after Trump in Manhattan. Go after the Proud Boys in D.C. The judge determined that, look, you jury, men and women of the jury, you can go ahead and determine that this was seditious conspiracy, even if it's revealed in this trial that they had no plan. How does that make sense? How is that fair? If it's a conspiracy, if they're conspiring, they have to have a plan. But you see, the prosecutors couldn't show that. They couldn't prove that. So the judge says, that's all right. Hey, I'll just tell the jury that you can go ahead and find them guilty, even if they have no plan. Kangaroo court. New York Times says, in a series of searches before the trial began, investigators collected more than a 500,000 text messages from the Ministry of Self-Defense and other Proud Boys group chats. While some of the messages were overtly violent and hinted of action at the Capitol, none set forth an explicit plan to storm the building or to forcibly disrupt the election certification taking place inside. They had no plans to disrupt or storm the building, and yet guilty of seditious conspiracy. This is from again, Merrick Garland's Victory Lap yesterday, clip two.
We have worked to analyze massive amounts of physical and digital data. We have recovered devices, decrypted electronic messages, triangulated phones, and poured through tens of thousands of hours of video. We have also benefited from tens of thousands of tips we received from the public. Following these digital and physical footprints, we were able to identify hundreds of people who, often masked, took part in the unlawful conduct of that day.
Wow, that's quite the investigation. That last week, the Inspector General at the DOJ, Michael Horowitz, he said more than 3.4 million search queries into the NSA database took place between December 1, 2020, that's right after the steal, and November 30th, 2021. So over the course of just 1 year, 3.4 million search queries by government officials and or contractors working on behalf of the federal government. It says the result was more than 1 million searches of private documents and communications of Americans that were illegal and noncompliant, and over 10,000 federal employees have access to the database. He said the quiet part out loud. 10,000 people have access to all these private communications among Americans? They're spying on Americans, in other words. Thousands upon thousands of them. You can see why there's 240,000 people working at DHS and 50, 60,000 at the FBI. Who knows how many in the DOJ? The largest, they get up there and crow yesterday, the largest, most extensive investigation in history. This is get Trump lawfare. Let's call it what it is. Go after Trump and go after his supporters. We learned this week as well the case of, what's her name, Deborah Sandoval. She's a 56-year-old mother from Iowa. She entered into the Capitol through an open door, stayed inside for 24 minutes, and then left. And this week, a judge sentenced her to 5 months in jail. 5 months. The prosecutors were trying to get 3 months. The judge says, you know what? That's not enough. He upped it. This good, fair, just judge, he ups it from 3 months to 5 months, even though the government prosecutors suggested three. She's just a 56-year-old mother from Iowa, and she was in there 24 minutes. I mean, she's part of the interruption of the process that was going on. So, you know, we do believe she belongs in prison. Judge says, thank you very much. I'm going to keep her in there 2 more months. The New York Times says here, Mr. Bertino, a Proud Boy from North Carolina who pleaded guilty to sedition in a deal with the government, told the jury that the Proud Boys' culture of violence and increasing desperation after the election came together with cataclysmic results on January 6th. This is one that got off because of a plea deal. It says, even if there were no explicit orders to attack the Capitol that day, he said members of the group believed there was an implicit agreement to band together and to take the lead in waging all-out revolution. No, there was no actual order, but he believed that it was implicit. You see, they're trying to divine the crime. This is what Bill Barr came back to D.C. to try to get rid of. Them divining crimes on Donald Trump. And now you see it in these cases as well. They just go in and look, they'll find a crime somehow. Even if you had no plan. That's okay. We could still put you behind bars. This is not a judicial system. This is witchcraft. This is witchcraft. The Bible talks up. I should have brought some verses with me to go through it. In the last days, this is a lot of demonic activity for sure. Listen to Julie Kelly, her reaction to these Proud Boy convictions yesterday, clip 3.
These are huge bombshells and big victories for the DOJ. Not tough to do in the D.C. Banana Republic, judicial and legal circle of hell, I've called it for the past 2 years. Very easy to do, especially when the foreman of the jury referred to January 6th as an insurrection during the jury selection process and called BLM basically social justice warriors. That was the foreperson for the jury, just to give you a taste of what these men were up against. But look, this is a really tragic day. This was not an incident of domestic terrorism. These men were not violent for the most part. This is a First Amendment case, as are many of the January 6th cases. But this is just another way for this Department of Justice to retaliate against Americans who protested Joe Biden's election and to criminalize political dissent in this country.
Criminalize political dissent. Get Trump lawfare. Can't stop him at the ballot box. Just try to put him behind bars. Prevent him from coming back into office that way. There's this story, I'm running out of time, but this another piece at the New York Times. Justice Department intensifying efforts to determine if Trump hid documents. Remember when he had the secret nuclear codes tucked away there in Melania's closet? They've moved on from that. This article basically admits they're trying to get him on process. It's no longer even about the contents of the so-called classified documents. It's not even about whether he had the right to have them, which he did as an ex-president. He was totally cooperating, and just like General Flynn, they'll set you up for some kind of process crime. They're intensifying their efforts. You want to see who's participating in this article for the New York Times? You've got Maggie Haberman. You've got Adam Goldman. You've got Alan Feuer. You've got Ben Protas and Michael Schmidt. Five reporters working on this story. And they're trying to get Trump now on the fact that he moved boxes. That's right. In Manhattan, get him on a bookkeeping error. In D.C., I think we might be able to get him on moving boxes. Federal prosecutors investigating former President Donald Trump's handling of classified documents have obtained the confidential cooperation of a person who has worked for him at Mar-a-Lago, part of an intensifying effort to determine whether Mr. Trump ordered boxes containing sensitive material moved out of a storage room there as the government sought to recover it last year. So he was playing keep away from. Remember, he's letting the government come in and out of Mar-a-Lago. Now, instead of the document, forget about the documents. We're so far beyond that. Now it's about, did he move a box ahead of the FBI's visit to search the place? Maybe we can get him on box moving. Outrageous. One outrageous story after another and proudly reported. Not just reported at the New York Times, but five reporters put on the story of the moved boxes. America under attack, don't forget, the new throne of David, U.S. and Britain in prophecy. In the last hour, just a few of the books we plugged on today's show. You're listening to Stephen Fleury, and this is the Trumpet Daily. We appreciate you joining us on today's show. We thank you for joining us all week. And we'll see you next time.